This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Acclaimed journalist Paul Fitzgerald joins me live on the long line. He is the co-author, along with Elizabeth Gould, of Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. It's the new book everybody's talking about, and we'll be giving away a free copy here at the end of the interview. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We've got a lot we want to talk about. Charlie Wilson and what's really going on in Afghanistan, and I'm very interested in what you think we as Americans need to know and understand. Before we get to all that, though, just give us a quick, Paul 101 and how you came to be one of the nation's experts on Afghanistan.
Well, it certainly didn't start out that way. It was not intentional. I didn't intend to spend 30 years doing this, but it was just one of those lifetime things where one thing led to another. But I had a talk show in Boston on the Christian Broadcasting Network affiliate. I was their public affairs person. I had come in, I had worked in a number of different political campaigns in the area, and so I would come in and do these interviews. And one of the things that they were doing was they were running a documentary called The Salt Syndrome, which was an anti-strategic arms limitation documentary. It was essentially a propaganda piece that had been put together by an ad hoc group that was opposed to the SALT Treaty. And that was a big news story at the time. And so I went to the management and I said, you're running this as a public affairs program. You have to answer it with an opposing point of view. So they said, okay, fine, go out and, put something together. So Liz and I had purchased some equipment at that point, and so we went out and we interviewed some people and met some people who were involved in the issue. And Boston was a real hotbed of that issue during the time period. John Galbraith was here. He was the economist. He had a lot to say about it. And so we sat down with him for a day, and he gave us the whole background of the economics of the arms race and why the proposed Reagan buildup, which was just beginning to happen during that time period, that was becoming an issue in 1979, was not going to be good for the American economy. There were lots of reasons why that military industrial spending was not really beneficial in the long run. And so what happened was there was a trade-off going on where enormous amounts of money were being proposed for that. So we interviewed Paul Warnke, who had negotiated the treaty, and when our show was about to air, the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. This would have been in December of 1979. And so all of a sudden we saw all these people who we had been talking to and say, well, we've lost. The Soviets have blown it. We're back to the Cold War. It's 1947 all over again. And a lot of people who'd gone into Washington during the Roosevelt administration were packing up and actually leaving. So we said, this is very strange. Where's the public debate? What really happened? Where's detente? Where is this, where is the peace dividend that we were promised by President Carter when he was elected in 1976? So about 2 weeks after the Soviets invaded, the entire Western media, 1,135 Western journalists, were expelled. So it completely blacked out the entire issue. So as we went around, we were calling, this would have been the summer of 1980, trying to get our documentary distributed in various TV stations, and we were getting a kind of feedback that was saying, well, with the Russians in Afghanistan, who wants to talk about detente? So finally, around July, August, I said to Liz, I said, what do you think if we go to the Afghans and ask them if we could bring a TV crew in? I mean, what a news story would that make? And so she said, great, let's give it a shot. So we put together a proposal, and we asked around, and we went down to the United Nations, and we talked to the Afghan legation at the United Nations. And the man was the representative was an Oxford-educated individual, and he said, well, it sounds like a great idea to me, he said, but I have to convince them back in Kabul. So anyway, so 6 months later, we finally got the word that the visas were coming through. So we had to hastily throw together a TV crew, and we went in. And CBS News was very interested in picking up the story. They were very,
I bet so,
backing us in this, because they were, Dan Rather, of course, had gone in the spring of 1980, and he wanted to have the first word on Afghanistan. So So that was the beginning of our adventure.
We're talking with Paul Fitzgerald. He and Elizabeth Gould are co-authors of the new book, Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. Paul, one of the themes of your book and one of the strongest things about it, I think, is that it provides some really rich historical context to what's going on in Afghanistan now that we as Americans truly need to understand, I believe, so that we can go past the headlines, so that we can learn as members of a free society to ask questions of our leaders when they say something. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about this untold story and some of the things that you believe aren't discussed enough and that we really should know.
Well, you know, it really is kind of an irony. I mean, here we are, a nation composed of individuals from probably every country and race in the world, and yet we have very little understanding collectively of what's gone on in the history of the world to bring it to the point that it's at right now. I mean, in Vietnam, the French were there for many years prior to the American involvement. They had a history with the French, with the Vietnamese. There was a cultural exchange. There was an understanding. Whatever the Vietnamese felt about the French, or whatever the French felt about the Vietnamese, there was an enculturation that had occurred over many years. And the same goes for Afghanistan and India. Britain was in that part of the world beginning in 1600. The British East India Company was chartered by Queen Elizabeth I on the last day of December in 1600. So, you know, their whole involvement, their immersion into that part of the world came over a long, long period of time. And their first war, of course, Afghanistan was invaded by Britain on three separate occasions. The first war was fought in 1839 to 1842. The second war was fought 40 years later, and then the third war was in 1919. But Britain, regardless of that, Britain and Great Britain and Afghanistan had a history together. They had a culture together. They understood. Britain understood the tribal nature of the societies that they were at work with. Within what is today is Pakistan. And so as a result of that, when we picked up the mantle of these old colonial powers after World War II in 1947, 1948, began to take on those responsibilities, we didn't have the people in our government who had the background, who had the knowledge and the sophistication of understanding these things. We had some people who did. But as a result, we wound up relying a lot on these colonial policies, which was specifically not what places like Afghanistan were looking for. Afghanistan had been trying to develop itself as a modern nation from the 1880s on. And as a result of that, they had looked to the United States. One of the things that we came upon in our research were a lot of the original cables that had been sent back by Afghan leaders to American presidents requesting legations and relationships with the United States. When the United States first really got involved politically with Afghanistan, it wasn't until the 1940s. And Britain still cast a long shadow over Afghanistan. In fact, Britain casts a long shadow over Afghanistan today in terms of policy. And that, we have seen, really has affected, has really disempowered America's ability to deal with Afghanistan effectively. There's been a lot of 19th century colonial attitudes and approaches that have been kind of woven into the fabric of American policy that at this point are invisible. You don't even see them in terms of the American universities, as an example. You go to, in our area, of course, you have your universities in your think tanks in Washington and the Virginia area. We have a lot of the universities, of course, in the Boston area, and you come up against these attitudes that are essentially neocolonial attitudes, which is has inhibited the United States' ability to function effectively in Afghanistan.
We're talking with Paul Fitzgerald, co-author of the new book, Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story, and we'll be giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. Paul, let me ask you about Charlie Wilson, because that made a big splash, and a lot of Americans, let's admit it, what they know about Afghanistan today is from that movie, Charlie Wilson's War, about the Russian invasion and supplying and creating, basically helping to arm the Taliban, which, of course, we later would overthrow. What really is that story?
Well, you know, the thing about Charlie Wilson is that what you see on the screen is really almost the exact opposite of the way it really happened. You know, I mean, Hollywood does not do did not do Washington any favors by glorifying the calling together all these Muslim radicals from all over the world and in many cases criminals into Afghanistan in order to defeat the Soviets there. Charlie Wilson, we went there in 1981. We interviewed Barbara Karmal, who was the Soviet-installed president that the Soviets had put in. And I put the question to him flat out. I said, all right, I said, what would it take to get the Soviets to go home? And he said, as soon as the U.S.-backed Mujahideen stop coming over the border from Pakistan and raiding and burning down schools and attacking women and knocking down power lines, then the Soviets will go home. And so we came back with that story, of course, and nobody was interested in hearing that. So we put together another trip in 1983 where we brought Roger Fisher from the Harvard Negotiation Project, and we to put the question directly to the Russians, to say, what would it take you to go home? Roger was an international negotiator. He was having, at the time, he had a book out called Getting to Yes, which is now in, I don't know, the many, many publications of it, many printings of it. And he had full-page ads in the New York Times, so this was an international event. We brought Roger into Kabul. The Soviet specialist comes down from Moscow to meet with him. He goes to the Russian embassy, and he comes back from the Russian embassy, and he says, Paul, they don't want to be here. He said, I asked him, I said, what would it take? And so he said, you don't know how bad it is for us here. We really don't want to be here. We make mistakes, but we're not stupid. Give us 6 months. Tell us, go back to Washington, go back to New York. Tell the United States that we don't want to be here. All we need is to save face. Give us 6 months to save that face, and we'll let the Afghans decide on that issue themselves and let them resolve the problems themselves. The war was really winding down at that point. Gorbachev, who later became the premier of the country, was in Canada in the summer of 1983, and he announced to an agricultural delegation, he said that Afghanistan had been a big mistake and that it was bleeding the country and that they didn't want to be there. Of course, to people like Charlie Wilson, that was exactly what they wanted to hear, that the supporting the Mujahideen was actually hurting the Soviet Union. So instead of raising the money to drive them out, they were already willing to go out. All they needed was for the United States to pull back on its pressure for a short period of time. They didn't want that to happen. They really wanted to hurt them there. And we've heard that from many people who were involved in support for the Mujahideen during that time period, that they had them trapped in there and they wanted to pulverize them as much as they could, and they certainly did.
We're talking with Paul Fitzgerald. The new book is Afghanistan's Untold Story, and we're giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. So, Paul, let me ask you this. Afghanistan, of course, is still making headlines in America. We still have men and women overseas serving and dying in Afghanistan. There's still members people in Afghanistan who call that home who are dying. What do you believe, as somebody who's been over there for many, many years and knows the situation so well, where to from here? What are our best options? What do we what does America need to be doing over there that perhaps we're not doing?
Well, you know, from the very beginning, this was known by people. You know, there's a small group of people, but you know, once you get to know the Afghans, you know, it's quite an amazing event. These are very dynamic people. They're more, I like to say, they're more like us than we are. They don't like being pushed around. And the fact is that, you know, when the United States went in there in 2001, they really expected that we were going in there as an ally. We were going in there as a friend. We were going in there to help them do all the things that they had been trying to do when they were under the control of Russia and under the control of Britain. And instead of that, the United States came in with the attitude that the Afghans were somehow guilty of 9/11, that they were complicit in that and harboring the Taliban and harboring al-Qaeda, and took a wartime attitude towards the Afghan people. And that's been a serious problem. And that was an attitude problem in the United States. And as I said to you earlier about the nature of this carryover of the attitudes, the neo-colonial attitudes from the British, it's almost as if the United States didn't even think about what it was doing. It just simply picked up Rudyard Kipling's burden that from the 19th century and went in there to go after these Pashtun tribesmen up in the mountains. And that's what's been going on. And up until a few years ago, the United States, the jury was still out as far as the Afghan people were concerned about what was going on. But as of about a few years ago, I think the consensus opinion in Afghanistan was that, oh, the United States really isn't here to help us. The United States is really here to occupy us. And they have a pipeline agenda or another global agenda or a Eurasian conquest agenda. And we really have to take a different attitude towards it. So that's what's been going on.
But we can't deny the fact
it's really been its own worst enemy when it comes down to what's going on right now.
But Paul, we can't deny the fact that the Taliban was there and Al Qaeda was in fact training soldiers in Afghanistan.
No, there's no question about that. But you have to realize that the Taliban. I know that this is there's a lot of people out there who try to make believe that the Taliban are indigenous Afghan force. The Taliban were created by Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Directorate. They were an advance guard in order to make Afghanistan a safe haven for Pakistan's primary concern, which is a war with India. Pakistan has been at war with India on a number of occasions, and they look to the smaller Afghanistan. There's about 175 million Pakistanis. There's only about 40 million Afghans, 35 million Afghans. They look at Afghanistan as their own territory. They look at Afghanistan as a colony of theirs that they can use as they please, and that would give them access, that would give Pakistan, the larger Pakistan, the energy-starved Pakistan, access to Central Asian gas and oil reserves that they desperately need. So you have to realize that as far as the Afghan people were concerned, they were being occupied by this Taliban force that was being supported by Pakistan's imperialist efforts. And as a result of that, what happened was, of course, is that Pakistan has a very, very good public relations campaign. They're very effective. In fact, Holbrooke has complained that both India and Pakistan are so good at their public relations that Afghanistan really gets lost in the shuffle, in the struggle between Pakistan and India.
So the real question is not so much what to do about Afghanistan, but what do we do about Pakistan?
Exactly. That's the primary concern. And, we've written numerous things about this, is that, this is not the Pakistani people. This is Pakistan's military establishment. And once again, this is a holdover from the colonial era. The Punjabis are the majority population in Pakistan. They have they are the military. They have kept down on a number of ethnicities there in Baluchistan and in the tribal areas of Pakistan in the mountains bordering there, and they have played that. This has been going on since the creation of Pakistan in 1947. They have utilized these tribes, which were divided by the British in 1893, and that area, of course, I'm sure your audience probably does not realize that 5/8 of what today is Pakistan used to be Afghanistan before the British got there. And so that is a constant bone of contention. And unfortunately, that's what the United States has wound up getting itself involved with. They've got themselves involved with a conflict between the Pashtun tribal areas and the Pashtun tribes and the Punjabis that has been going on for 400, 500 years.
Jeez. Paul Fitzgerald, co-author of the new book, Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. And Paul, let's get you back on again and we'll talk more about Pakistan if we can.
That would be terrific. We'd love to do that.
I'd look forward to that. The new book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story, co-authors Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould, two of the nation's experts about what's going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.